Okay. Looking at section two, physical development. Some of the different things that psychologists are going to look at with physical development include looking at infants and how, as they age, what changes as far as their overall physical development. Some of the things that change are reflexes, or your automatic body responses to various stimuli that you're taking in. Changes in height and weight, you know, how rapid that is, how slow that is at different times. Motor development, how you control the functioning of your limbs, your body, how you control your motion. And perceptual development, how you take in, or how you perceive stimuli, like your vision, hearing, smell, all those different stimuli that you're taking in, how that changes over time, of course, are of interest to psychologists. Whoops. All right, looking specifically at height and weight, fairly amazing. Infants early on, typically double birth weight in the first 5 months and triple it in 1 year. So it's kind of fascinating. I'm always fascinated by the human body and how smart it is and how it works, how intelligently it's kind of designed. Because early on, you can imagine your weight doubling right now and how that would change your life. But I suppose you can't have a completely gradual process when it comes to height and weight either, because it would just take too long for us to be physically developed enough to be competent in the world. So, you know, if you grow, say right now you're growing at 2 inches a year or something like that, it would take way too long to be able to be kind of fully developed if you went at that pace all along. So we start off at this very rapid shoot up and out type of development when it comes to height and weight. Double in the first 5 months, triple in 1 year. In the first year of life, an infant will typically grow about 10 inches in height, which is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, if you've ever seen every once in a while you'll have an adolescent that shoots up 8 inches in a year or something like that. It's just a drastic, drastic change. But early on both in utero and in the first year, you get that kind of dramatic change. Even though it's not as striking because we're dealing with a very small subject. In the second year, we get another 4 to 6 inches typically, and about 4 to 7 pounds in weight. And so not quite as striking, but still growing at a very rapid rate. Around age two through adolescence, it's typical to gain 2 to 3 inches and 4 to 6 pounds per year. So again, very early on, the first couple of years, you're getting a pretty big spike in growth early on, and then it kind of levels out and plateaus a little bit as you get a little bit older. You can get some big growth spurts in there in the adolescent years as well. This guy hasn't been wanting to move for me today. I don't know what the deal is. Looking at motor development and how that changes over time, at first babies are basically just a bundle of reflexes and random movements. They don't really know much about the world, they don't really understand the world, but they have these biological reflexes in them that are, again, kind of well designed to have them respond well to their world, even though they might not know exactly what they're doing. And a science teacher would be able to explain probably all of them. I only have some facts on some of them, but they tend to make quite a bit of sense. After not long, you know, maybe six months, a year or so, we start to get purposeful movements out of an infant, which is what we call motor development, moving beyond just kind of those reflexes and random movements to purposeful movements. Motor development proceeds in stages. For example, from roll to sit to stand to walk, kind of like we talked about yesterday, we're going through fairly dramatic changes, and this probably has to do with development in the brain, development in the muscles, and that when the infant is starting to grow and develop those muscles that allow it to do new things, it naturally kind of responds differently and moves to the next stage of motor development. Forget what my notes were saying here. Oh yeah. As that process bumps along, we see not only kind of inside of our own culture do we get a lot of different kind of speeds of infants and children going through this sequence of growth. We know we see the same sequence with all little kids, but different speeds kind of based on their biology. That said, from culture to culture, you get differences as well. And one of the examples that your textbook looks at is Uganda, where they find that studies found that infants often walk before 10 months of age, whereas similar studies in the U.S. found that typically kids are not going to start walking until, or infants won't start walking until after the first year. Okay, so statistically, if you got a good size sample, I don't know exactly what the sample sizes were, but statistically that's a pretty good divide, and that says that something seems to be going on there that's creating a difference. And the hypothesis that they come up with, or the possible explanation, is that in Uganda, again, a different culture, different lifestyle, those infants are spending a lot more time riding with the parents, close contact, they're upright more. They're spending a lot more time upright, kind of getting ready to be upright and walk. Whereas a lot of the kids in the U.S. are probably spending a little bit more time in a crib, laying on their back, and perhaps aren't kind of moving in the direction of walking in the same way. I wish I knew exactly when I started to walk, because I know early on in my life, I was born on a farm, and I know that my mom had to do a lot of work on the farm. We had a very kind of odd lifestyle, and I don't know if I've even mentioned this to you guys, but my family was a bit of an interesting one. We didn't have running water. So we had to haul all the water heated up. We had a cook stove, so instead of like an electric stove, you would have had to start a fire, soak the fire, get it to the right temperature. All those things, like if you wanted to cook pancakes, you had to do all this prep work in order to get it to the right heat. So there's a lot of work in that kind of lifestyle, and my mom was part of that. She wasn't able to just be in the house. She had to do a lot of this work as well. And we also grew pretty much all our own food. We had very large, kind of, I guess, like kind of a hobby farm, you'd call it, where we were producing all our own food. My parents were kind of part of the Back to the Lander movement, where it was all about kind of going back to a simple way of life. So I know for my mother, and this is before the more sophisticated, I guess, like baby carriers that they have today, my mom would wear overalls, and I just kind of got stuck in the front pouch, you know, as she's going about her day, and she's carrying water and all this stuff. I just kind of went in the front pouch, and she would tighten up the straps, and I was just kind of right there. So I was pretty much like a child in Uganda, where I was getting a lot of time upright. So I don't know if I'll have to ask my mom whether or not I started walking a little bit quicker or not. My guess is no. I think I was a pretty relaxed, laid-back kid, quite comfortable to lay on the floor and draw and do different things like that. So, but I would wonder. So we know that there's some cultural differences as well as biological differences between different children. There we go. Looking at reflexes and how they change a little bit. Reflexes, of course, are automatic or biological. They are not learned. They are essential to our survival. They help us out a great deal. It's kind of like the reflexes that we were talking about with the article on fear. We still have certain reflexes that are very much geared to survival. That reflex to freeze if you feel like you're in danger is not something we necessarily think about, and you know, evolutionary biologists would theorize that that's because, you know, you might want to freeze when a predator's around or something like that. So you have this automatic reflex to try to help you survive. Examples of that, of course, are breathing, sneezing, coughing, yawning, blinking, right? All these things that we kind of need to do, we don't have to think about at all. And they all have a certain function, obviously. You know, breathing gives us oxygen. sneezing can clear our nasal passages and get rid of different contaminants or whatever might be bugging us or might cause an infection. If we feel something in there without even knowing it, our body will just kind of spit it out or sneeze it out. With yawning, typically what's happening there, or at least my understanding of it, is that your brain needs more oxygen, and typically when you're tired, you close your mouth more. I know I do this all the time. You close your mouth more, you're not taking in as much oxygen, the brain's not getting as much oxygen. So when you yawn, it's forcing you to open up your passageways again and get more oxygen to the brain. It's basically your body saying, I'm not getting enough oxygen. And that's why, part of the reason you probably feel tired. And blinking, a big part of that is, of course, to get junk out of your eye, kind of like sneezing. Some of the different reflexes that babies start off with, one is called the rooting reflex, and typically right away when a baby is born, they'll do a bunch of different little tests. They'll test the reflexes, because you can't obviously, as a doctor, you can't ask a baby, you know, is something wrong? Do you feel like something isn't working quite right or whatever? So with an infant, they test reflexes, and if all the reflexes seem to be in order, then, you know, hopefully you have a healthy baby there. One of the reflexes is the rooting reflex, where the babies are going to reflexively suck and swallow what touches their cheeks or the corners of their mouth. And you can see kind of the evolutionary reason for this. Before a baby could really understand their world, understand it, and understand that they need to take in food or comprehend an instruction from a parent, they need to be able to eat. They need to be able to take in milk or some type of food, some type of sustenance. So they have this reflex to just naturally kind of glom onto something and kind of suck and take in the milk. So that's called the rooting reflex. Another reflex that they test in the hospital is called the Moro or startle reflex, where babies will pull up their legs and arch their backs in response to sudden sound or bumps. And I don't know as much about that one as far as is necessarily saying the evolutionary basis for it. But you could probably hypothesize something in your own mind about why that might be. They test the Babinski reflex, where babies fan out their toes when the soles of their feet are touched. So if they'll kind of drag their finger or grab, I don't know if they use something like a little piece of metal to scrape, I can't remember. They'll drag it along the soles of the feet and see if the toes flare out in reaction to that. And if they are, well, chances are kind of the nervous system is working correctly. Looking at perceptual development, or the way that we look at the world, the way babies look at the world, and how that changes over time, the early years anyway, we know that the process by which infants learn to make sense of sights, sounds, tastes, etc. is changing kind of in the first years of life. And we find that infants seem to be pre-programmed to survey their environment and to learn about it. So kind of much as they found, like as B.F. Skinner found with the rats, where just naturally the rats would explore even if they didn't have any incentive to do so, we find the same thing with babies, where they're kind of just naturally pre-programmed to be a little bit adventurous, to learn to take in information from their surrounding, and that's probably an evolutionary manifestation as well. We find that infants prefer to look at more at the most complex things they are capable of seeing well. So they're going to be a little bit more interested in something that has more going on, as long as they can take it in. With their vision at that point, they're going to challenge themselves and be more interested in more complicated or more complex visuals. Find that infants prefer seeing faces over other images. Again, probably has an evolutionary basis. Older children understand depth perception better than newborns and tend to back away from, as there's one study in your book, they back away from an illusion of drop-off, which is something that seems to be learned throughout experience. And they start to understand what a drop-off is, what that means, and that it's something to stay away from. But at about 9 months, they start to understand depth perception. And remember in your book, there's an image on 233 where there's a baby crawling across the floor. And they, I'm trying to remember exactly how they do this. I think they have like a hardwood floor or whatever, and then they have kind of bumps into or juts into like a glass floor or something like that. So it looks like, to the baby that's crawling along there, it looks like there's a drop-off, but it really stays level. So it's not like the baby's going to actually fall, but they find that early on in life, in the first 9 months or so, a baby's not going to react to that kind of that fake drop-off. But at about 9 months, they start to understand depth perception. They start to, and you can see how they would through some experience, through kind of plotting